It's time!
Happy New Mobile Medal! The Eagle rises again! 29-0.
That's it! He's got the chance!
Nate Diaz!
He's got
it! He has done it! It is all over! Nate Diaz beats Conor McGregor!
What a night, ladies and gentlemen! What a night!
Rose Lava, you are trying to close the show!
She was doing a great job of faith!
You're listening to Pound for Pound, ringside for all things MMA and boxing on WFUV Sports.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Pound for Pound, WFUV's home for all things combat sports. I'm your host, Andrew Canary, and I'm joined alongside Maya Dembele and Riley Lucas once again. We finally have UFC fights back. That will preview, and we're going to switch our gears to boxing, break down that Canelo-Alvarez fight.
That
over
joke
Jamel
of a
Charla.
Fight.
Yeah, I know. Mahdi is already face-palming over here. Before that, though, how are you doing, guys? How was your week?
You know, I'll be nice. I'll let Mahdi go first. He deserves it before I bully him.
You know, honestly, it's not very fair. You know, I come out here with, I think, solid enough analysis of and then he does the opposite of what you say.
It's the Mahdi curse, I'm telling you.
Is it me?
I will say, I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt because I did bully you into going for Charlo because I wanted Canelo Alvarez.
Even with that, it's like the opposite of what I said. Let's get into it.
I mean, yeah, we could get into it. This has been a rough one for me. I mean, I'm coming off my high horse of that win, of course, but I think Stevie Wonder could have even saw that coming, if we're being honest. Everyone knew it was going to go that way. But yeah, I'm having a rough week, so let's just get into the good stuff.
All right. Well, let's just jump right into it then. Canelo Alvarez, I mean, we were talking a little bit about it just moments ago, but officially defeats Jermell Charlo via unanimous decision. Oof, man, these scorecards were something. 119 to 108, 118 to 109, 118 to 109. As unanimous as it gets, a complete domination from Canelo, and I feel kind of stupid coming on the podcast last week being like, is the Canelo fall off real? Are we going to actually see it this fight?
Yeah, but with all due respect, I mean, does this fight just show how unprepared Charlo was or how good Canelo did? Because I really don't think this spoke to Canelo, like, still at the top of his game.
You know, I think that's actually a fair point. I don't think that Canelo did what Canelo does. You know, I mean, great counterpunching, you know, capitalizing on big moments and just, you know, that constant, not necessarily pressure, but just presence in the ring. But nothing that we really saw him, like, you know, dig deep for. And yeah. I think that's kind of what you were saying.
Mm-hmm.
It just seemed to me like Charlo didn't show up in this fight. You were playing a clip earlier just before we started this episode that we definitely cannot play on the air.
Cameron and Mace, we love their show. It is what it is. They had a great breakdown of how big of a joke Charlo was that fight. It was just hard to watch.
No, I mean, he said it as candidly, I think, as you ever could. I mean, just completely ripping into him because it seemed like he just didn't want to push the fight. So, I mean, the question I just want to ask both of you guys is, what was that Charlo performance?
I'll say this. I'm a huge Charlo guy. Really, really like him. And he pushes the needle. Listen, I like crazy guys.
Keep going.
I like crazy guys who like jumping up and down and fighting whoever. He pushes the needle outside the cage. I expect him to do it inside. He didn't do it. He's the best at 154 ever. Like, even like off the top of my head, I remember like Terry Norris. But I like Charlo. I think he's the best at that weight class like ever. He wanted Canelo Alvarez. You see him talking and stuff. And he just didn't do, like, any, like, he worked the jab. That's the only nice thing I could say. Canelo, with the left jab to the body, kept working him all night. It was electric. Jermell Charlo, you disappointed me. I wanted to see more. It's just we need to see more. You got dropped in the seventh round, and from there, I mean, from start to that point, like, Canelo was just beating you, like, straight
just,
up from
the
back.
He seemed like a shell of what we see in his, you know, past fights. And, I, you know, maybe people want to say, like, oh, he's moving up two weight classes, and I think that's a very fair argument.
But then if you're not ready.
What I'm saying. I think he bit off more than he can chew. Landing at a margin, Canelo outlanded Charlo a margin of, like, 134 to 71. Canelo landed, like, I think 35% of his punches overall, 40% with power connects. And just ending off this little stat line, 42-11 advantage in body shots.
Back like
and
I mean, never left.
No, but like one thing is to move up 2 weight classes, but to do so and make your first fight not anybody in that weight class, but one of the someone who could be considered the best of all time in that way. Like, it's just crazy. And I think, I mean, last week I came on here and I said that, you know, Charlo has to stay away. Like, he cannot get in front of Canelo, because if he gets caught, he's going to get caught hard. He's going down. And I think maybe that was in his head, because as we know, he was running. Like Cameron said perfectly in his podcast, he's like, he comes out here saying he's doing it for the culture. That's why he's doing it. What culture? Was it the track culture? Because he was just running around the ring. It was hard to watch. And I want to say, too, I was so excited when he did get dropped in the 7th round, because last week I did come on and say it was going to be a 7th round win for Canelo. So when that happened, I was jumping up and down. I was like, this is it. This is it. I predicted this perfectly. And, of course, he somehow got back up. But either way, it was still a very disappointing showing. I was actually surprised that the scorecard was not as far off as
farther.
It should have been. Yeah, it was a little too close for me, and it was still a clear win for Canelo.
And back like he never left. Like, this is Canelo's, 62nd fight? 61st fight?
Yeah, 63rd, around that neighborhood.
My main thing was the attrition. Like, you saw him a few years ago, best pound for pound in the world, but as time went on, he kept moving up. What happened? He wasn't the same Canelo. He comes back, and then he takes care of the business easy. Like, I'm a huge Charlo guy. And what did I say last week? Charlo's like the same way like Errol Spence like haunts you, like walks you down. Like, Jermell Charlo does that too, but he's bigger and he's more explosive and he's gonna push the knee. He's running the entire fight.
And yeah,
he didn't even give himself a chance.
I do want to actually say a Charlo quote that he said after the fight. He said, "You could feel the difference in weight because I came up 12 pounds. I was daring to be great today. I took the shots and just kept pushing."
But
which,
did he?
That's what I'm saying. Did he keep pushing? And like, that, honestly, like, I'm getting a lot of similar shades to when Israel Adesanya moved up to heavyweight and fought Błachowicz.
And
he was like, "Oh, I dared to be great. I moved up a weight class." And I was like, "If you're not prepared for it, man, then don't do it.
Yeah, it's like they're biting off way more than they could chew. It's unreal. I think really going into it, the only advantage he did have over Canelo was height and reach. And it's like, what's the point of having that advantage if you don't utilize it? And, you know, reach and height can only get you so far when the person you're fighting has immense power and is amazing. Like, in this weight class, like, they're a pro in this weight class. This is something that's new for you. He should not have jumped into this. Like I said, this was inevitable. It was going to happen. If you didn't think, you know, if you were someone who thought Canelo was losing this, I have nothing to say to you. Mahdi, I'm actually giving you a hall pass because
I thought Canelo was going to win. I bullied you into it. It's the only time
I'm going to, like, give him the hall pass.
What that really is an excuse, right? Guys moving up, because to me, the best fighters are the ones. That's why Floyd Mayweather's not the best to me. I like the crazy guys, the guys that jump up and down divisions and they fight whoever.
Yeah.
If you jump up a division, I don't want to hear an excuse about how you had to come up. That's what great fighters do, because if you had won, I wouldn't be hearing anything from you.
Mm-hmm.
That's what great fighters do. They jump up and down and they fight whoever. Like, when Izzy lost,
I get that, but I don't at the same time.
You're Israel Adesanya, be great. But if you lose, I don't want to hear.
See, when I think of it like great fighters, I'm thinking of someone like more so like from the perspective of Canelo, who they're not like crazy and jumping around like weight class and stuff like that. But Canelo, he's like, you look at him and I would never think like he's as good as he is. Like, maybe that's just something, I'm blind or something, but I don't get that vibe from him. And he is not even like a predominantly fast fighter, but his hands are so quick. Like, he surprises me in those aspects. And that's why I get like amazed by Canelo and all that he could do, because I don't see that from him. And then when I see him in the ring, I'm like, oh, like, I can't say that word on here, but like, I mean, I was about to say something like it's appalling to me. And not to jump into another conversation really quick, but like, obviously too, we saw he like called out Bud Crawford after the fight. I mean, a little crazy to me. And Mahdi, I know you're also like a Terrence Crawford fan. I know that's your dude. Like, how do you feel about that?
No. Straight up, no. Charlo going after Bud?
Yeah, I was actually about to bring up that question. He literally said, "I want to fight Terrence Crawford at my weight division." And I think the weight division thing is something, you know, important. Maybe that can make the fight more compelling. But, like, how are you going to ask for a massive fight after blowing this?
And with all due respect, that was the fight he should have started with. We talked about that a lot last week, but that would have made way more sense. Like, if anybody should have fought Canelo, it should have been his brother, but we all know, like, that's not going to happen.
It should have been Jamal against Canelo, and I thought that he was going to get the fight against Bud Crawford. But jumping up, now you lose all your leverage, right? You were on the sideline saying, "I'm the best at 154 ever," and then you take this fight, and then you lose convincingly. You want to go after the number one pound-for-pound guy in the world who just beat a guy in the most anticipated fight that was supposed to happen years ago. It's not going to happen. You got to get back.
And like after watching what he did to Errol Spence Jr., like, do you really want that? Like,
exactly.
That's, like, I mean, granted, the whole retina thing, like, I think that contributed a lot to that loss. But that was another joke of a fight too. Like, well, clearly we need to even up the playing field here because we're watching a lot of beatdowns.
Yeah.
Like, it's just jokes of a fight.
You want to go after Crawford?
I remember this. It was one of the first UFC events I ever went to go see, and it was Corey Anderson when he knocked out Johnny Walker, and he was like, there's levels to this. There's levels to this. And it was kind of taken as a joke, but I mean, I think that's what we see more so in boxing than the UFC, and that is that there are levels. Like, you know, you got these guys that are extremely competitive, like Errol Spence or Jermell Charlo, but when they go up against legitimate greats T-Bud or in Canelo, it's just nothing.
Too much.
Complete shutout. So, I mean, I think it's more of a testament to the skill of those guys that are still at the top.
Yeah, and I mean, we just have so many shutouts, I feel like, even to come. Like, we have that Devin Haney fight.
And who? Devin Haney and who? Say it.
Anybody Devin Haney fights.
Oh, Shakur.
Anybody.
I'm not saying Shakur because he's not fighting Shakur anytime soon, sadly. On paper, yeah. I mean, I wish it was. There's no contract.
I wish that he was fighting Shakur. I mean, that's the fight that everyone wants to see. But that's that's a different argument.
Yeah,
that's
I just had to make that joke real quick. As we know, I'm like Devin Haney's like
the
worshiper,
Devin Haney stan over
the president of his fan club.
Just to say, Charlo, you want to go after like Bud Crawford? Like, other than marvelous Marvin Hagler, I actually got his name legally changed to Marvelous Marvin Hagler, but. Like, Bud Crawford might be the best switch hitter of all time. Like, I'm thinking Prince Nassim Ahmed. I'm thinking Andre Ward. I'm thinking even, like, Tyson Fury. The best switch hitter ever. One of the best counterpunchers in the game ever. That's the guy you want to go. Number one pound for pound in the world.
But I feel like, more so. I mean, like, when you bring up somebody like Nassim, like, it was more...
In terms of switch hitting.
In terms of switch hitting, I think, like, he's not even in that conversation. One, because the career didn't go on for too long. Mm-hmm. And also, like, it came from weird... angles, and it wasn't like very technical setups. Like, he wasn't able to do it against the top of the top.
Yeah.
Which I feel like, you know, T-Bud has proven time and time again.
Okay, so like Andre Ward, let's take out Nassim. You're right. Yeah. But
100%.
To go after a guy like that's the guy that you want? No. It's just no. Maybe he's in your weight division yet, but no.
No chance.
Not right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think he needs another couple tune-up fights, Charlo, to get back into the game, because this was embarrassing.
What a joke. Like, there's no other way to say it. Like, it was just a joke. I turned it on. I was just like, this is... I thought it was going to be bad. I said that, but I didn't think it was going to be this bad. I didn't. And that was the same thing with, you know, Bud Crawford to me, too. Like, I thought that was going to be a bad fight for Errol Spence Jr., but I did not think it was going to be as bad as it was.
And, just, like it really sounds like we're beating up on Jermell right now, and I was going to say, like, if he came out there and, like, fought a really hard fight and still lost it and, you know, got beat down for it, I think we would have had more respect for him rather than him just, you know,
running around
fighting for the track culture, as you said earlier.
He knew that he could not get in front of Canelo. Like, that was the way he was going to lose his fight. Like, he has to stay out of his way. And the second he got in front of him, if he was susceptible to taking a hit, he's going down.
Yeah.
Instead of just, like, being trained and, like, fighting for that and just being ready, he was just running from it.
And he took himself out of his element. Look, boxing, it's mostly about... like, the impression you leave on your contemporaries. Like, you got to go into that ring. And when you take yourself out of your element, it shows people, it shows your contemporaries you're scared. You took yourself out of your element. Don't lose being something that you're not. Like, walk your guys down. Like, that's my main criticism with, like, Devin Haney and that Lomachenko fight. Right? He didn't. I wanted him to hawk down the smaller guy who's 35 years old looking to get back. He didn't. It's
Devin
the same
Haney
thing
won
here.
That fight.
Yeah, he won that fight, but how'd he look?
He looked great.
Okay.
All right. We're going to move on. Riley's going to start like throwing things.
I'm
going to
start throwing up, too. He's talking.
But, yeah, I mean, I don't know. It was an odd fight that was anticipated by a lot, and I feel like it didn't really deliver other than Canelo just being Canelo.
Yeah, also to say, like, aside from the fact that he couldn't get in front of him just for, like, any reason, I think, too, like, his chin, like, you know, Charlo's known for having a good chin, but in this perspective, like, I think he knew deep down, like, his chin was not ready for 168. It was not going to hold up, especially Canelo 168.
Round.
Yeah, that seventh round, man, that felt so good. I was like, this is it. I'm going to be right. I'm going to rub it in. I had you guys, like, my phone ready to call, FaceTime up. I was like, yes.
I mean,
he still won, but it would have been nice if he won the exact round I picked. But.
Yeah. Well, I mean, big ups to Canelo. Charlo, go back to the drawing board. I mean, I still like him as a fighter. I feel like he has some great qualities. It's just just not his night. Just really not his night. But moving on, though, we actually have some UFC fights. They're officially back after a little bit of a bye week last weekend, and I'm very, very glad. And it's actually a pretty good card. When I saw the headliner, I was like, this is kind of whatever. I'm excited to see Bobby Green fight. But looking out throughout this main card, I mean, we've got Drew Dober, Alex Morono, you know, a couple good fighters. It should be very, very fun. It's going down, I believe, in Vegas. The main event, as I did say, was Bobby Green versus Grant Dawson. Should be a fun main card. I'm really looking forward to it, but I do want to jump into the first fight of this main card, just get some quick predictions as we just go throughout it. Alexander Hernandez taking on Bill Algeo. Really, really interesting fight. Bill Algeo is the slight minus 142 favorite. And I think I am going to take Algeo going into this fight. I've never been a huge Alexander Hernandez fight, linking back to when he came into the UFC on short notice, knocked out Beneil Dariush, and then it's still a crazy, you know, short notice, one of the craziest things I've ever seen in my life, but still, like, he thought he was, like, the hottest product in the UFC after that, and then he got finished, I believe, by Drew Dober.
Wait, who did you go with? I'm sorry. I'm going with
Bill Algeo, I believe. I was just saying, I'm not a big fan of Alexander Hernandez. Also a big Cowboy Cerrone fan, and Cowboy Cerrone absolutely, like, demolished Alexander Hernandez. So yeah. I'm just on the big Alexander Hernandez hate train, but I want to see, like, what do you guys see in this fight, and what are your guys' predictions?
Bill Algeo had a really, really good fight. I want to say it was against Gilbert Burns' brother. I think Gilbert Burns' brother tore his ACL, but was winning the fight. But it was just Algeo's ability to come back, because he came back towards the end. Burns was dealing with an injury, but it was just the way he finished. I like him for a fight. Again, Alexander Hernandez, he comes off and he just kicked in the door, Beneil Dariush. How many people could say that? But then he gets sparked a couple of fights later. And since then, 14-6 record. His last fight, I want to say he's coming off a win, but I think Bill Algeo stops him in this fight.
Yeah, he in his last fight, he beat Jim Miller, I love Jim Miller. I think, you know, one of the most career, you know, celebrated UFC fighters in history. I think he has the most UFC wins in history, actually holds that record currently. I believe. He's a record holder in the UFC. But still, though, I mean, Jim Miller's at the end of his career. It's just, I don't know. It's not really convincing me too much, to be quite honest with you. Riley, what do you see going into
I wanted to say Alexander Hernandez, obviously, because he also is a striker. You know, my bias on the BJJ guys.
Fair.
But granted, too, I don't want to harp too much on this because it was almost a year ago. But that Billy fight with Alexander Hernandez, that was a hard one to watch for me. So I kind of lost a little bit of hope, I would say, in him. And it goes against everything I stand for to go with Billy or Bill here, not Billy Quarantillo. That was the last fight he lost. But it's just, I feel like I have to, and I hate to agree with both you guys. But so maybe I'll just go with Alexander Hernandez to be different as well. You know?
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Just to stand out and have a little debating factor here. But that loss there, I mean, the Miller fight, that win was nice, but I still think in my head I'm thinking of the whole Billy Q fight, and that's just where I see him as. And despite that being like a year ago, I just don't have that much faith in him. So I'll just pull for him, though, just to be different.
Got you. All right. Yeah. Well, we'll see. We'll see how it goes. Honestly, I think Algeo, I don't think it will be a finish necessarily. I can see a unanimous decision, but we'll see how it pans out, though. I mean, lightweight always delivers, so we'll see how it goes.
Yes, it does.
But moving on, though, we got actually another lightweight fight that I'm so, so excited for. That is Drew Dober coming back, fighting Ricky Glenn in the lightweight division. I'm a huge Drew Dober fan. I mean, like, the memes have been thrown around that he looks like the Crimson Chin from Fairy Godparents or Odd Parents.
That's good.
And 100%.
Being the Crimson Chin, that's perfect.
Oh, 100%. And, like, I'll tell you guys a little bit of an anecdotal story. So going into looking at 2022 for Drew Dober, you see 3 KO TKOs, round 2, round 1, round 3. And all against really good guys, Bobby Green, Rafael Alves, Terrence McKinney, some like really, really hyped up prospects in the lightweight division. So going in person to UFC 288, I was covering it at the Prudential Center. Drew Dober was fighting Matt Frivola. I was like, this is an amazing fight.
Yeah.
And looking at his past record, I was like, Drew Dober's going to so win this. I'm so betting on this fight. I put some money down on this fight. I get on my seat. I pull out my laptop ready to cover the fight. I was so excited for it. Matt Frivola goes out and knocks him out in the first round. Damn. And I was so upset. I was like, of course, as soon as I bet on Drew Dober, as soon as I put money behind him, my full faith, of course, that's the time that he loses. But actually, Zach, our Shadow/producer for this week, said before we got in here, Drew Dober never has a boring fight. And at the very least, yeah. I agree with that. I mean, even his loss to Matt Frivola, always an exciting fight. You always got to tune in. And I think Drew Dober's going to get the win here. I don't think Ricky Glenn has got too much to show him. But, guys, what do you think for this fight?
Again, I'm going to agree with you. I wouldn't point you to UFC 288. I would point you to UFC Vegas 66, where he fought Bobby Green. And the one thing about Bobby Green is he surprised me.
Another exciting fighter. Really.
Like, if he was a boxer, he'd be one with a very, very, very high work rate. Did you see the combination that Drew Dober put on Bobby Green to finish him? Really good. So he could stand up with the best of them. And, again, just as my man Zach said, never had a boring fight. It's always going to go to the finish. There's always going to be blood. So I got to go with Drew Dober. I really, really like him. I'm really high on him.
Are you agreeing again, Riley?
No,
I know you said you hate
strike.
To do that.
He could throw it.
Obviously, we know Drew Dober is favored here, and I do agree with the perspective that he never has a boring fight. But I am going to go Ricky Glenn just because, I mean, his submission average, too, is it's aggressively better. And then in terms of his takedown averages, I mean, Drew Dober has – you know, the better takedown average here, but it's not that far off. And I just, you know, I'm just going to
and that's
also be different,
the thing, too.
Can I add to this really quickly? Ricky Glenn, really, he has good takedown defense. Like sneaky good takedown defense. Like, that's not a guy that's easy to take down. So I understand where you're coming from there in that department.
But I mean, I hate go too. He's coming off a loss. So
both coming off losses.
Really? Are they both?
Yeah,
Drew Dober coming off?
Yeah.
So that, to me, like, that could go anyway, it could either mean you're now going to start going on a losing streak or you're just going to be in your redemption arc. So whenever I see that, I get a little like, ooh, what's going to happen here? But I still think I'm going to go with Ricky Glenn. I think he's a great striker. You know, I love watching him fight Southpaw. I don't know. I just think it's going to work. I think Southpaw versus Southpaw, this is going to be a good one either way.
Yeah,
and like
we'll
you said, Drew Dober never has a boring fight. So.
Exactly. Yeah, at the very least, I think he's going to push the pressure. But the way at least I view this fight is, I mean, look at Ricky Glenn's last fight, got knocked out by Christos Giagos, round one. Similar situation for Drew Dober, got knocked out by Matt Frivola in his last fight, round one. So I think both of these guys are not necessarily coming off fights that they think that they lost, like, you know, like hands down. If anything, it was a quick knockout, maybe a bit of a flash knockdown. So I think these guys are looking to really get back into their groove. And if they do, I don't think they'll really, you know, think too much of that previous loss. But whoever loses this next fight, whoever isn't coming out on top, I think that is going to be a real impact because you come off of a big knockout, and then after this fight, whatever ends up happening, another loss piled on top. So I think this is big stakes for whichever fighter or for both fighters going into this one. But we'll see how it pans out. I'm definitely rooting for Drew Dober, though. He's my guy. But moving on, though, we have another exciting fight, I believe, in the welterweight division. We got Alex Morono versus Joaquin Buckley. Joaquin Buckley, as pretty much everyone knows him out there now, as the highlight master, essentially, probably the most viral UFC knockout in history. The spinning two-touch kick where Impa Kasagane caught the kick, and then Joaquin Buckley flipped around, did a, like, I don't know, it's like a spinning touch kick. It wasn't like a wheel kick. It was more of kind of like a, I don't even know what to call it. It was kind of like a stabbing kick to the head.
Yeah, just a quick, like, pow.
Exactly. Like, kind of like a front kick just to the face. But I don't know, it was weird. But it looked fantastic. Forever etched his name into the UFC history books with that one. Since then, I mean, he's had a couple big finishes, a couple not so great appearances for him where he's gotten knocked out a couple times. I'm thinking Alessio Tiscerchio really kind of exposed him. So going into this fight, what do you guys see? And do you think that Joaquin Buckley can possibly maybe sort of get another highlight?
Yeah, I think he could.
You think so? Definitely?
I think he could. I wouldn't say, like, definitely. Like, I'm not super confident, but I am going with Buckley this fight. I think also what's going to come in handy, too, is, you know, the whole orthodox versus southpaw with his reach advantage. I believe he has, like, a 5-inch reach advantage here. Something like that. Yeah, like 5 inches. I think that's going to really help him in this matchup. And I could see him having another sick highlight. Like, I really could. I could see this being fight of the night.
I don't know his record in the UFC. I know he's coming off of a win. Again, what you could, all it takes in the fight game is one, like, this pertains more so to boxing, but you just need to be perfect for a second. If you have knockout power, and I know that was with his feet, like, going viral, like, that was the most insane, like, it's like a touch kick to, like, the chin. I just have been winning. I think his average fight time, I have it right here, is 9 minutes and 28 seconds. This guy knows how to put it away earlier. And his strikes per minute are about, landed per minute, about four per minute. Significant strike rate is at 32%. He could do it, and he's pretty good with his defense. So I like Joaquin Buckley. Ever since that moment, it's guys like that that they just have star written across him. I really, really like him.
They got the star potential, I guess.
You're lucky I have, like, an allergy, like, thing going on now, and I'm very, like, mild and
is it
calm.
Like the jaws?
Yeah, my nose is stuffed up because I would be going crazy right now that we're picking all these same people. It's giving me...
Yeah, I know. Listen, I was actually going in here to pick Joaquin Buckley also. I know. Hold on. I'm explaining. I'll explain myself. But it was kind of like out of a bad situation because I don't like either one of these fighters. I like Joaquin Buckley's style. Don't get me wrong. I think he's a very, very fun fighter. I don't think he's the best of people. I mean, this is also kind of like post facto. Like, I remember James Krause talking about, like, how he's, you know, not a great person, like, knocks people out in sparring and everything like that. But then James Krause had his whole, like betting allegation. Yeah. So now he doesn't have
the
cleanest
pot
slate.
Calling the kettle black.
I feel like everyone's a little, you know, crazy. It's a UFC. They're getting knocked out left and right. Their brain cells are shot.
Yeah.
Like, they're all nuts. Like, they're crazy.
Also, on the other side of that, though, Alex Morono, I hate Alex Morono because I believe Cowboy Cerrone was supposed to be fighting Diego Sanchez. That should have been such an easy win for Cowboy when he was back in the UFC. Diego Sanchez pulled out of the fight, and then they put in Alex Morono, who proceeds to knock out Cowboy in the first round. And after that, I was like, I hate this guy.
Hey, you can't
even,
knock out Cowboy.
Yeah,
you
I know.
Can't
I was
do
like,
that?
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. My favorite fight. You can't knock him out. I was so upset after that. And I was like, this late nose replacement loser. I can't wait to see him lose. So I'm going with Joaquin Buckley just because I'm praying
out
on
of spite?
Oh, yeah.
Praying
out
of spite?
I'm praying on Alex Morono's
also
downfall.
Can we talk about how this is a very American fight card, which I feel like we haven't seen in so long? I mean, we have a lot of different, you know, cultures in the prelims, but this isn't a very American main card. And I feel like we always got, like, some Brazilians out here, some Russians, you know, the Dagestani Russians.
Yeah,
and it's just a very American fight card.
Yeah, the red, white, and blue is strong with
this
card, I guess.
Yes, this fight night is going to have, like, Kansas and Kentucky going crazy or something. Like, this is wild.
Yeah, I know. This is kind of weird, though. I mean, like, you kind of highlighted a little bit earlier, though, Riley. We're all kind of agreeing on these fights, which normally we all disagree.
Yeah, I don't
so
like
at
this.
Least in these final two fights, we got to at least have some
I don't
changes.
Know if we will.
I don't
yeah,
know.
We'll see. Some different
points. As she looks at me.
Yeah. Moving over. We got our co-main event, and that is Joe Pyfer in the middleweight division, taking on Abdul Razak Al-Hassan. That should be a very, very fun fight. Both of these guys have one hit quit power.
Oh my God. They both hit
like Mack trucks. I've been a big fan of Joe Pyfer dating back to the Contender series where he made a big debut. And since then, he's just been really, really good in the UFC. Abdul Razak Al-Hassan's been in the UFC for a bit longer, had some peaks and valleys throughout his UFC tenure, but I think he's still an extremely dangerous dude if you look at his highlights.
Mm-hmm.
But just going into this fight, who do you guys got personally for me?
Easy money.
I think Pyfer.
Oh my God.
No. Are you kidding me? All right. You know what?
I'll do this.
I'm going Pyfer. I'm not switching this one. I'm sorry. I've switched the last one. I'm not switching this
one. I'll switch because I'll say this. Yes. Joe Pyfer, he proved me wrong. I think it was one of the earlier episodes of 1-on-1. I picked GM3 to beat him, Gerald Mearskart to beat him. And that's because Gerald Mearskart, like, one of the best submission. Like, he's up there with, like, Nate Diaz. He's up there with Oliveira. Like, I believe it was, like, I forget the number, but he was a really good submission fighter. Pyfer sparks him unconscious. Abdul Razak Al-Hassan. I want to say, or excuse me.
You said
Joe
that
Pyfer
very
is,
nicely. I would have botched that.
I'm Africa. I got to say Abdul Razak Al-Hassan. Joe Pyfer's takedown accuracy is actually 100%.
That's what I was about to say. Like, that's crazy. And then his takedown averages are 1.65. Like, that's, I mean, either he's got him on submission averages too. Like, I think this is going to be an
easy one. Al-Hassan's TKO record is 100% as well. Like, this guy has power in his hands.
That's true.
I could see a universe. I'm going to lean with Pyfer, but I see a universe where Al-Hassan wins.
It could happen. I mean, I'm going Pyfer,
I'm not as sure on this one.
Also, to note that Pyfer's been on a win streak since 2021. I think that's going to keep going for him. I hope it does at least.
Both on win streaks.
Oh, really?
Both on win streaks.
Joe Pyfer's been on that. Like, what is this? I think this is going to be like 5-fight win streak for him now. I have to check.
Five.
And then, you know, he's got him in submission averages. He's got him in takedown averages. He does have him. Abdul has him on KO, so I'll give you that. He's got him on the knockouts. But, I mean, I'm still going Joe Pyfer. I think it's just going to work for him. And I also I'm a little biased towards the guys who come in here with the boxing style. So I'm going Joe Piper. Okay. I'm just biased.
Yeah, so at least how I'm kind of picking this fight, at least for myself, I think that, like, I'm kind of playing a little bit of, like, matchmaker view myself as, like, maybe Sean Shelby a little bit. Like, I'm going into this fight thinking, like, all right, we got this huge prospect, Joe Piper, just beat GM3, also beat another guy on, the Sandhagen versus Song card, both in the first round. This guy is, like, really hot. We want to give him a bit of a tough test, but something that's doable and something that could get him a big highlight. So I think that they're teeing him up for a fight that's definitely winnable, but I think it will be a test. And I think the big test here is the power on the other side. If you look at, you know, Joe Poyfer's other fights, GM3 does not have that power. I'm sorry, no. Gerald Meerschaert, like, you're a great grappler. You're not him when it comes to the power. and then Alen Amedovsky. I really hope
that's,
I'm pronouncing.
That's a
tough
Mahdi,
name.
We'll let you do this one.
This other fighter also, I mean, nothing that's, you know, really too crazy in terms of power either. He's more of a grappling fighter, so I'm really excited to see how he deals with somebody that has power that's equal to his own. So I think that should be a really, really fun fight. I'm looking really forward to it. I think Joe Piper's going to get it done, though, but we will see.
I would lean middle. Not too sure.
You're not too sure?
You've kind of convinced me a little bit, Mahdi, to be more towards the middle. I'm still going Joe Piper, but now I have more of a different perspective a little bit, just which is careful. Rare that I'm, yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Gotcha.
That's how you know I'm feeling sick today, guys. I'm like, something's up.
Yeah, well, we'll see how that fight goes. I'm very excited for it. But moving on to this main event, which was a bit of a head scratcher until I looked at the previous records and I was like, wow, both these guys are kind of on
win streaks as well.
And Bobby Green's always just an exciting fighter.
Bobby Green's not on a huge win streak. He had one win.
I mean, he had one win.
And then
the no contest, which
was crazy. But then I think there's losses before that.
Kind of a win. And I think the no contest, like, remember we were talking about that? He viewed that as a win. He was like, I won that fight.
Where's my money?
Exactly. That's what he said.
Where's my money saga?
And then he beats El Kukui. Like, I know El Kukui on the downside. I know it.
Wasn't that
so
when
much.
My Russian king Sergey won? Wasn't that card?
Come on, pay attention, Riley.
Like, sorry, I just wanted to rub that in real quick.
He beats El Kukui, which I know El Kukui's on the downside, but the pedigree of fighter that Tony Ferguson is, like, Tony Ferguson at his best. We were talking about him and Khabib, like, murdering the lightweight division. Bobby Green, I mean, at his. Again,
did you have Tony Ferguson in that fight? I just wanted to.
I did have Tony Ferguson.
So sorry.
I think I had Tony.
Everyone
Ferguson
had
also.
Tony Ferguson. It's Tony Ferguson.
I didn't.
Yeah, I mean, the less we talk about the fight, the better. Honestly, I'm just depressed about Tony Ferguson.
I am.
Who's
sorry, fighting?
I've been so nice to Mahdi today. Yeah. I have to just, like, rub it in a little
it's
bit.
It's Tony Ferguson. Who doesn't love El Kukui? But what I have to say about Bobby Green, I always say it about him. He's like a boxer with a very, very high work rate, and he can make things interesting. It was like Sean Strickland before he was champ. Like, this is a guy that can make things interesting, and he put together a little streak, and he has some nice fights under his belt. I don't know if he's going to do it against a guy like Grant Dawson. Grant Dawson, he impresses me particularly with it.
I'll speak my piece while you kind of prepare what you, I guess you have a bit of
I think
retort.
Let's
so,
hear
yeah.
What this
yeah,
is, yeah,
so I think I'm huge on the Grant Dawson hype train. I think that he is, I don't want to say he's him, but, like, I think that he is a big prospect, and I think a win with Bobby over Bobby Green would do huge things for him, and I think he has the stuff to beat him. I mean, go back to 2021 Leonardo Santos fight. I think he still holds the record for the latest knockout in UFC history. He got it at round 3, 4 minutes, 59 seconds. Some real Anderson Silva over Chael Sonnen type stuff, if it was a knockout. But since then, he's been great. I mean, he's beating Jared Gordon, which Bobby Green obviously had a tough time with. Yeah. He beat Mark Madsen, who Mark Madsen's nickname is literally the Olympian.
Yeah.
And he out-wrestled him, outstruck him, actually submitted him, which is really, really impressive. And then going into 2023, beat Demir Ismagulov again through grappling, through some nice MMA striking mixed with clinch work. And Demir Ismagulov, I believe he's actually retired now, if I'm not mistaken, but he was a really scary guy before people like Grant Dawson really kind of exposed him. So going into this fight, I think that this is Grant Dawson's fight to win, and I think it's going to be a big night for him. I mean, improving to 21-1, don't really pay attention to that one draw, but going to 21-1, I mean, that's, like, crazy in the UFC. So I think that it's his night.
I'm very middle on this fight, I will say.
It's
really
his fight
down
to lose. That's what I'll say. It's his fight to lose because Bobby Green could put the pressure on. And
I just feel like, I mean, it's really simple for me. I'm not even going to get into stats and stuff like that or percentages. Like, I just feel like ever since that no contest, like, Bobby Green's had, like, this fire lit within.
Yeah.
And he's in his redemption arc. And I think that he's going to surprise some people. He's obviously the underdog in this fight. And I'm still just going to pull for Bobby Green. I think. I just think he's a funny guy. I like him. I'm a little biased with just his character. And I, like I said, ever since that no contest, like we saw with the whole Tony Ferguson fight, like I just think that he has this like monster within and he's like in his redemption path and it's not going to stop anytime soon.
No.
Though I do think Grant Dawson is a force to be reckoned with. So that's why I see myself kind of in the middle. But if I'm going to have to pick a side here, I'm going Bobby Green.
Yeah, so I think the big edge for me is the grappling. I think that's a big difference.
Yeah.
I think that Bobby Green has the edge in terms of striking. He's just so clean.
It's, volume,
yeah, I mean, like, honestly, I think he beat Rafael Fiziev when they fought, even though Fiziev ended up getting the decision win. I know a lot of people were upset with that, and I actually was a little bit. I felt like Bobby Green kind of sort of edged that win. But Dawson has the very clear grappling advantage.
Yeah.
And if we want to go back to Bobby Green versus Islam Makhachev, you know, say what you want. It was short notice. Bobby Green came in, you know, just like seeing like, oh, you know, we'll see what we can do. Still, though, got steamrolled.
Yeah.
Steamrolled. It was so bad. So I think that Grant Dawson can, you know, I guess do some shades of Islam Makhachev or, you know, take some notes from him and just
perhaps
use grappling to really negate the striking advantage of Bobby Green.
I mean, Bobby Green's takedown defense is at 74% too, which is something insane, which I wouldn't expect. So, yeah, I mean, Bobby Green, he could keep the pressure up. I think it's more so volume with him. I'll side with Grant Dawson. That's
okay,
mine.
Okay, gotcha. All
right, that's fine. I could live with it.
So you're going Bobby. You're going Bobby Green.
Yeah, I'm going Bobby Green.
All right, fair.
Whatever. I could live with it. I will say I'm not like confident with this one.
It's not the power.
I'm not. I'm gonna be very open and honest, but because I know I'm gonna get grilled next week if this goes south. I hope it doesn't go south, obviously. But I just think Bobby Green. Like I said, he's on that warpath ever since that moment. You heard him. Like, where's my money? Give me my money. And ever since we've seen a new Bobby Green, and I would be scared if I'm Grant Dawson.
Okay.
That's all. I still think he's a force to be reckoned with, but.
Me
Yikes.
And Maddy are writing up the roasting scripts as we speak.
I mean, every time we say this, I've, you
know,
never
lost.
Actually,
I don't know. I might have just jinxed us, actually. I probably, Maddy just gave me, like, the look of death right there.
I am known for my amazing, fight.
I need one on her. I need one on her. Just one.
You Maddy, got one over
I think
summer.
Your weekend, this is your weekend.
You got
this
one
is,
on
this
over
is my weekend.
You
know, I was
only
on a streak, and then she comes back, and then my streak is
it
over.
It has to be an
your
in-person
bad luck.
Thing, yeah.
You're
I'm your bad luck.
Yeah,
I'm your worst nightmare.
Luck.
That's crazy.
Well, speaking of bad luck, though, we do have one bit of news that I do want to talk about before we wrap up this episode, and that is Dylan Danis kind of, sort of, maybe pulling out of
Nina
the fight
Hagdahl's
against
his bad luck.
Logan Paul. Ooh. What's up?
Nina's his bad luck.
Yeah, I mean, I guess so.
Leave Nina
I don't
alone.
Know, man. That's his kryptonite, I guess.
Maddy's
but,
in his feminist era.
Yeah,
he's
so
like defending Nina.
Leave her alone.
Leave
so
her
now,
alone. Shut up.
So now it's like, come on, guys. Let's get back on track here. Let's get back on track. Dylan Danis, though, now kind of up in the air if he's actually going to be fighting Logan Paul or not, which now makes the kind of it makes the fight now of Logan Paul versus Mike Perry if Dylan Danis isn't going to show up, which is completely different. I mean, I'm kind of excited to talk about that, maybe if that is something that's going to be happening. But I believe Riley was the one that said before this pod that he is going to be showing up.
All I know is that Dylan Danis posted that he was going to be done with the fight because there's another lawsuit from now Logan coming forward as opposed to the Nina perspective. And then right before we got in here, he tweeted that he's still fighting. So, you know, who the heck knows? Like, really, I just can't keep up with this saga. It's just starting to get old for me now. But I will say that Logan Paul, I feel like he's doing the most to try to push Dylan Danis to drop out so he could run the narrative like, oh, he's scared of me, he dropped out. But also,
so
it's
he
like
could go fight Mike
but that's
Perry?
What I was just about to say. Why would you do that? Because if you fight Mike Perry, like, you're gonna die. Like, honestly, I want Dylan Danis to beat Logan Paul up, like, tremendously, because Logan, I like Jake Paul, I don't like Logan Paul. I've made that very clear. It might shift next month. Like, I'm a very back and forth person with these Paul brothers, but I don't like Logan at all. I think he's a soft wussy, I will say, a wussy.
Uh-oh.
And I cannot stand him, and I just, like, I could go on, we've already been on that hate train, but moral of the story, it's like, I would love to see Dillon beat Logan up, but I really think that Logan is very capable of winning that fight versus Dillon. Like, Dillon's a BJJ guy who barely fights. Like, when's the last time he's even fought? Like, what, like 2018?
Yeah.
Like, that's unreal.
It's so much more of an even fight than if Logan might fighting
Mike Perry.
Yeah. Might be fighting Mike Perry.
No, but I think Logan could definitely beat Dillon. I don't want him to, but I just think he could. So for him to now, like, push Dillon out when Mike Perry's the replacement, I'm kind of like, why? Because now you actually are susceptible to getting knocked out.
Yeah, now this is like a
real fight. Yeah, before I really thought he could take Dillon Danis, no matter how much training he does. Like, he's a BJJ guy who hasn't even fought BJJ since 2018.
Exactly.
Like, what are you doing?
He could pull Alex Pereira for however many photo ops that he wants. It's still
we
not
get
gonna,
it. You're cool with Conor McGregor. Like,
yeah, it's
got
not.
It.
It's not going to show me that you're a great striker until I see it in the ring. And honestly, like, I don't think that, honestly, the way I've always seen this fight when it first got scheduled was Dillon Danis is not going to be appearing for this fight or fighting in it up until I see him in the ring. It's not going to happen up until I see him in the ring, because I've seen this man bail on so many things that I don't even think I could count him on two hands. It's ridiculous. My man is so noncommittal with everything.
Do you know how many times he's told me personally? Because, like, we've talked on the pod before how he tunes in and listens, so I hope he's listening now so I could tear him apart a little bit and, you know, make him mad. But there's been so many times where he's told me personally, like, oh, just stay tuned this month. I'm announcing my next fight.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it's happened for, like, I think, like, a series of, like, 7 months.
Dude, cash in on the payday.
Yeah. Like,
don't leave this one on the table.
At least fight, because now we're all just going to make fun. Like, everyone's already made fun of you for years because you're always saying, like, oh, you're the best out there when no one's even seen you fight. I don't even think I've ever seen him fight. I just know that he has, like, a long time ago.
Yeah.
So at least just get, like, you know, knocked out and just say that you did it so people could at least not bully you for that. Because he already has the respect of so many people, me included, for how much he's ripped Nina apart. And finally broken Logan down. Like, Logan's the biggest troll out there, and he's finally faltered to someone else's trolling. Like, he can't handle it.
Yeah, so I think, like, yeah, the biggest thing, I guess, for me is, like, if he doesn't show up, that's all shot now.
Yeah,
like, that's,
people,
like, he just threw that away, like, all that work.
People, like, have been saying, like, too, like, on Twitter, Instagram, everything, like, he's already won the fight in our eyes. Like, he could go out there and lose, and we still are Team Dillon Danis now. And that's a big shift from being, like, one of the most hated people on the internet to now someone who's, like, praised a little bit online.
Yeah.
So if he pulls out, though, he's going to lose at all. Like, it's just
100%.
Stupid.
Yeah, he's going to be viewed.
And I think
he's going to be called all the names.
And I think that's,
like,
why Logan's pushing for it, in a sense, like, with lawsuits, because he knows that's the only way to get the positive energy back to himself. Because right now, he's the bad guy.
He
and I think going into this, he thought he was going to be the superhero.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. We'll see how it pans out. I'm still, like, here, you know what? On, like, on a percentage scale, 0% to 100%, what's your guys' predictions on Dillon Danis showing up? Like, is it, like, a 60% he shows up, 40%?
Isn't the fight, like, next week?
Yeah, it's soon.
I thought it was the 14th. Am I wrong? Like, this
is
crazy to be, like, discussing this now. Like,
you know what? I on a scale of 1 to 100, I give it about 75.
I was
going to
say 75. Oh, I don't like this for us today.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it is October 14th, and
it's
honestly,
literally
I get,
next weekend.
I give it, like, a 50-50. Honestly, like, I could see it, like, day of, guys, Dillon Danis is not showing up. He's not answering any of his texts. He's out. And
but also, I could
so.
See Logan, like, he's such a, we got to remember who we're talking about here. He's good at swaying the media. He's good at manipulating the audiences. I could see him, like, doing some legal shit behind the scenes, like, the day of the fight, so it looks like Dillon pulled out the day of, but really, like, it was almost like he kind of had to, in a
which
sense.
Which is all the more reason for Dillon to show up. Get that payday, because he hasn't fought in.
Because I would never stick up for Dillon Danis for, like, no reason, but I've been on the Dillon Danis train specifically because Logan has handled this in the, like, the most soft way humanly possible, and I cannot stand him. Like, we talked about this on the one episode. Like, he's trying to come from the perspective of, like, he's, like, cares about women and he's, like, a feminist. Like, that was what he was saying. He's like, why would Dillon take down an innocent woman? Like, shut the hell up. Like, oh, I just want to strangle him. Like, shut up. Like, we know you don't think like that, Logan Paul. We are watching you in a suicide forest with, like, no compassion for others. Now all of a sudden you, like, support women. Like, shut up.
Yeah.
That's his tactic.
It's definitely a...
he's trying to manipulate us.
Yeah, I think that, honestly, just overarching, I think both of the Paul brothers are extreme manipulators. I think that
they
extreme
do.
Manipulators
and I
respect, you know,
it,
great
sense.
Marketers.
You guys don't like Bizarre Vark?
But I will say, though, I mean, Dillon Danis has also tweeted about, like, oh, I want to come to the UFC. Give me, like, Leon Edwards. It's an easy fight.
Okay,
give
but
me
how
Kevin
many
Holland
times has he tweeted?
Like, I know he said that so many times, but
so,
like,
sick of that too.
I think, like, if he, yeah, exactly. But if he doesn't show up in the ring, on October 14th, I consider
no one's
I think
everything
he
that he said. in the future and in the past, just all completely.
I
cap.
Think he does. All I think I have he wants to remain relevant. I think he wants some money. That's too much money with the advent of celebrity boxing, celebrity fighting now.
I think he's gonna lose, but I think he's gonna show up unless Logan does like the most to stop it, because Logan knows that he's the villain right now, and the only way to be the hero again and like to be remotely liked and change the energy is for Dylan Danis to pull out. Because even if Dylan gets beat up in the ring, people are still team Dylan Danis. Which is crazy to think that we are now living in a world where Dylan Danis is not like just the most insufferable person in the conversation.
We're living in like a bizarre world right now. Yeah,
moral of the story, like,
especially since both these guys are fighting each other in the first place. It's just
what is this? What is happening to boxing?
Yeah, like, I don't know.
Devin Haney, save us.
That's what Devin Haney, save us. Canelo,
December 9th.
T-Bud. We need some actual boxing, all right? We need to just move on past this.
Moral of the story, to end this conversation off, this is just a matter of who do you hate more?
Yeah, exactly.
This is like, if no one likes Dylan Danis, no one likes Logan Paul, but it's who do you hate more? That's who you want to lose.
Or who do you hate less?
Who do you tolerate more? Yeah.
And I just tolerate Dylan more now only because I think he's funny for trolling the biggest troll and like actually breaking him down. We have never been able to see someone break Logan Paul like this.
It makes it for a compelling fight, and I cannot wait to like actually maybe even try to talk about this from a technical last point, like who's gonna win. But we'll save that for the week heading into October 14th.
That's gonna be fun.
Next week, that's gonna be
freaking interesting.
On ounce for ounce.
Ounce for ounce. Who said that? No, it wasn't you. Yeah, no, it was who was that in here?
I think it was James Burley.
All right, yeah, we'll give James a shout out.
Yeah, big shout out. But yeah, I think that'll do it for this episode of Pound for Pound. Make sure to watch the UFC fights this weekend and our recap episode next week, breaking down all the results. Before I go, I want to give a massive thanks to our producer / shadow,
killed it,
Zach Cordova, our sports director Bobby C, and my two great co-hosts, Riley Lucas and Mahdi Dembele. I've been Andrew Canary, and Pound for Pound is a production of WFUV Sports.